The Burrows of Berea is a conversational podcast.
We study the Bible and we talk about it.
Not all of us are of the same faith.
And one of us doesn't have a faith.
But we still love one another, and we're going to continue to talk about these things.
The things we believe in and the things we believe about what we read in the Bible. Not all of these are necessarily true. Some of it is opinion and speculation. Thank you for
listening and speculating with us.
There you go. That was good. Yes.
You are listening to the Burrows of Berea.
Merry Christmas, everyone. This is Andy. Rick Welch decided to take a break from all the heavy studying to sit down and have a fun discussion about Christmas movies with Gary DeMar. All of us here at the Burrows of Berea podcast want to wish you all a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Well, welcome back to the Burrows of Berea, and I am Rick Welch, and I am here with Mr. Gary DeMar, the president of American Vision. He's been on our podcast a couple of times, and I reached out to him because one of my favorite things about the Gary DeMar podcast, usually in December, is he will begin talking about films, especially from the silver screen or from the Hollywood golden age, and he has so many more. So I wanted to talk to him about that and some other things. So welcome back, Mr. DeMar.
Good to be back. Yes.
Yeah, you look great. I remember hearing that you weren't feeling too well during the Eschatology Conference this past, I think it was, what was it, August? Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't so much I wasn't feeling well. I had one more cancer surgery to do. And trying to get on the schedule for it was the week of the conference. And if I didn't do it that week, it would have been in 2025 before I could actually get in. And I believe also the surgeon who was going to do it was retiring soon. So I had to keep that week open for the surgery. So I've had that. So it's, again, I mean, I fit all these five cancer surgeries I've had, I feel great. It's just that I've had these things I had to deal with for the past 2.5 years. And so far, so good.
So it makes sense that if the opportunity arises, you need to take it sooner rather than later.
Yeah. This, getting scheduled for certain types of operations, comes in various categories. So the thyroid deal was not an emergency deal. Mm-hmm. Some of the cancers I had needed to be treated right away, so I got in very quickly. But I've got one medical thing coming up that I wouldn't have been able to get in, and it wasn't an emergency thing. It was just something I had to get done. It wasn't until March, so. When you can get in, and I want to get it out, so I don't have any obstacles. But so anyway, that was the reason for that. I wasn't really sick at all. I just had to schedule this particular surgery.
That you're doing well. You have had a very busy, very busy year, at least in my opinion. I just recently picked up again. I picked up the Hope of Israel and the Nations, Volume 1, as well as Volume 2 here. The book that you co-authored with Kim Burgess, and of course the podcast Covenant Hermeneutics and Biblical Eschatology. I think it was a 25-part series, which was a phenomenal series. Yeah, that was a lot of work just to answer a question, sir.
Well, the thing is, Kim did all that pretty much off the top of his head, and so when we went in, there was nothing planned and so forth. He has been working on this for 40, more than 40 some years. And I wanted to get him recorded. But then the real work came when we had to go through and do all the editing, because he's a lot like I am. I didn't like the way I said this. I missed this particular thing. I wanted to add this to it. And so going through that process was arduous, but it all worked out. And basically it was just the two of us. He did his editing side. I did my editing side, and we sent it off to a typesetter. Proofing is always the big, big problem. So we just finished something on 1 Thessalonians 4.
Saw that. I bought it. The expansion pack in PDF.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which eventually got me in trouble because of you interviewing me on the eschatology thing where we were dealing with 1 Thessalonians 4 there. were asking about the resurrection. And so that put me on the track of really doing some study on this. And so Kim and I have been working on this. And our next goal is to do First Corinthians 15 and hopefully come out with a book like we did with the Hope of Israel and the Nations series.
And one of the funny parts about that, I love to blame my castmate, Billy Kimsey, who would tell you he's not a theological giant. He just asked you, where do we go when we die?
Yeah.
And then, you know, which opens up a whole can of worms, right? There's a lot of things to talk about there.
Yeah. And it's interesting, as I've done some study on this, you'll hear people say, well, this is what the church has always believed. Now, there are always outliers, but these aren't fringe outliers. These are people who believe the Bible is the word of God, you know, trust the Bible, comparing scripture with scripture. And in doing this, I found people who have a different way of interpreting the passage and consider the integrity of the text as the most important thing. So, and in doing that, you know, hey, I think there's a lot of room in 1 Thessalonians 4 for a different type of interpretation. Think about it. The dispensationalists do not view 1 Thessalonians 4 verses 13 through 18 as a second coming passage. It's considered, you know, the rapture of the church. So anyway, I know we're not talking about eschatology here, but in one sense, what we're going to talk about in terms of these films, at Christmas type films, are eschatological in nature because they assume something about what Christmas is, although they don't always acknowledge that. And at the same time, some of these films, there's a future orientation. What comes out in these films about the future for these people individually and families and so forth is redemptive in that respect. And that's what I've always been about in terms of eschatology. It isn't just to study eschatology for itself, but what are the cultural and social implications of what we believe about what the Bible has to say. And the Christmas story is important, even though in many of these films, you don't get a specific reference to the birth of Christ, but they're living with the implications of what it is. You can't have any type of Christmas celebration today unless you had the birth of Christ. And even though people don't necessarily acknowledge it, They do acknowledge the fruit that Christmas brings to a person's life in terms of reconciliation and transformation.
Absolutely. And that is definitely what I wanted to get into. Right before we get into the Christmas stuff, though, I wanted to mention this. So my father-in-law just celebrated his birthday yesterday, and I got him the book, The Christian Life and Character of the Civil Institutions of the United States. That's a mouthful title. But would you agree that is one of the most fascinating and greatest works, especially in its time, whenever Benjamin Morse put that together, that I think that every person should have a copy of this, and you have it in hard print on American Vision, and it's only like $39. It's a good deal. Would you agree?
Yeah, that book was published in 1864, mm-hmm. and I had never seen an original copy of it. I was working off a Xerox copy that was given to me by a good friend of mine. Well, got Dr. Gary North, and he had gotten it from a good friend of mine, Archie Jones, Archie actually wrote the foreword to it. Archie, unfortunately, just died this year. He was in his 80s. He was really an expert on the First Amendment. In fact, we've got a manuscript of his that's almost 1,000 pages just on the First Amendment. And then we ended up having it completely retypeset with new font, subheads, and so forth, and reprinted it, and it's gone through multiple printings, and it's a very nice, beautiful hardback. And again, 1864, before the internet, and I would say 80 to 85% of the material in there is original source documents from that time, which haven't changed. It's basically a history lesson. So yeah, that book, I used it when I debated a group of ACLU attorneys around Thanksgiving. And I had that Xerox copy on my lap. And I said, look, until you can answer the material that's in this book, you really don't have a case on your understanding of America's Christian heritage. And they had never heard about the book or ever seen a copy of the book. When I was a couple of years ago, Eric Rauch and I went down to Aledo, Texas, where David Barton is. And we spent a day there doing some filming. And he had a couple of copies in the library that they have there. So that was the first time I actually saw an original copy of it. And then from time to time, people will send me photographs of presidential libraries where they go into the presidential library and they'll go through there and they will see that book in the library shelf. But trying to find it today in a library across the United States is very difficult to find. So we're really the only ones that have printed it in a brand new font and so forth. And it's available at AmericanVision.org.
Yeah, it is. And I was happy to give it to my father-in-law. He loves all things about our Christian heritage and its effect on society. And so it was a great book. It is a beautiful book. So it was a great birthday present. And it can be a good Christmas present if you guys can get it early and try to get it shipped. You probably can get it before Christmas. Yeah, absolutely. Well, so I put on my tacky Christmas jacket, and my wife bought me a Grinch mug that has... It's here, it's nice, but if I'm in a bad mood, I can have the Grinch as he's naughty with some eggnog. And so with that thought of eggnog, I want to get into this first film. It's the one that I shared with you. You put on your list, and I watched and studied, and I was like, wow, this is a great movie. Have you ever heard of the drink, a Tom and Jerry?
Yes.
Yes, and I had never heard of it. I knew Tom and Jerry as the cat and mouse cartoon. That's what I knew. I didn't know that it was based off of an old film, and also a drink called the Tom and Jerry, which is eggnog with some form of alcohol, most likely rum or something in it. But it is in this film that is titled Beyond Tomorrow, and it was renamed Beyond Christmas, and it was filmed in 1940. So it being on your list, tell me what... I did a lot of back-end research, and I'll bring it out, but you kind of introduced this to... I know I'd be surprised if my audience even knows this film.
Well, these three men, three single men, are living together. It's around Christmas time, and one of them kind of has a shady past, and there's some guilt in his past, something he did in his past, and it's always been with him. And he considers that what he did in his past, and we're never told what it is. At least I can't remember. I don't think they ever do tell you what it is. That it was kind of impeding his life in some way, and would never really engage in life. And the other two men, a completely different attitude, and they run an experiment around Christmas time. It's snowing outside, and they think they each have a wallet, and they put $10 in it. Now, when this is in the 1940s, $10 probably back then was a lot of money. And what's interesting about a lot of these films that we're going to discuss, the older ones, most of them are all post-World War II films. And a lot of these films were looking for something a little light, but at the same time very optimistic, and also portraying what life was like back then. People, soldiers coming home and kind of, having to start all over again. So they take their wallets and they put $10 in it and they throw them outside, and there's a pretty busy sidewalk, and they want to see what the response is. And I think one person picks it up, takes the money out, and then throws the wallet in a trash can. I think
hands it to a driver. You'll find that's a character that shows up later, a very kind of a character that will discard things throughout the film.
And so then a young woman picks it up and the young man picks it up, and they, I guess there's an address in there, and they come
to their business card. There's a business card in there. Yep.
They come to the house, and there is the housekeeper, who is a Russian immigrant and who's taking care of these men. And again, this is all... this is all background to what was, you know, taking place post-World War I, World War II. All of this is going on in all these films. That it's a great history lesson, I think, for young people to ask the question, why was this Russian woman here? She's an immigrant. Well, what happened in Russia at that time? And so there's a lot of history in a lot of these films that you oftentimes miss because you're just focused on that actual storyline. So these two young man, young woman come in and they share with these three men and trying to find some backgrounds. And one man, I think the man is a singer, and I forget what the young lady. It's been a while since
I was a teacher. She was a teacher, and this other man was from Texas, and he was trying to sing for people.
Right. I don't want to give too much of this away.
Yes, exactly.
But the three men, no families, and they have to take a trip together. And again, 1940s, bad weather, and, you know, they... do you want me to tell, you know, what happened?
Yeah, it's a great intro. It doesn't tell you the whole of the film, but it tells you what the crux of this film is.
Right. They die in a plane crash, mm-hmm. and their spirits remain. And they feel protective of this young man and this young woman. And the story goes on from there. There's some success with him and so forth. And then it takes a little detour. And it's that detour kind of reminds me a little bit of the Samson and Delilah story. Yes. You know, you get caught up in something that you weren't prepared for and leads you off in a completely different direction. But again, it is a redemptive story. And there's another film we're going to look at called, you know, The Three Godfathers. And this kind of reminds me a little bit, these three men, the magi and those types of things, I think, are kind of hidden in here. If you know the biblical story and some of these other films and so forth, this is kind of a common approach where you find the nether world, the next world, kind of seeing this. And it happens in a number of films as well. Well, even as we're going to look at another one, most likely, with the Jimmy Stewart,
The Wonderful Life.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
And depicting the other world with kind of a spiritual consciousness. A lot of people don't like this because it's not a Christian depiction, but it's metaphor. It's describing things that, you know, going on in the world. It's kind of a fun thing as well. So this happens in quite a few films. There was a remake, Whatever Happened to Heaven. And then the original one is, I can't remember what the original one, which was, he was a fighter and he supposedly dies in a plane crash. They take him too soon. And as a result of that, he wants to get his body back so he can get back into life again. So this is kind of a common thing in some of these older films. I think it's an interesting vehicle.
This episode is brought to you by Supply Chain Solutions.
Supply Chain Solutions is a third-party logistics company providing small to mid-sized businesses an outstanding option focusing on warehouse management, customization of products, assembly and packaging of goods, and has the ability to meet business-to-business and business-to-consumer fulfillment needs. Supply Chain Solutions continually strive to be their customers' most highly valued partners for quality, delivery, responsiveness, and customer service. To learn more about Supply Chain Solutions, you can visit their website at www.supplychainsolutions3pl.com. That's www.supplychainsolutions3pl.com.
And now back to the show.
Yeah, and that's what fascinated me about Beyond Christmas. So Beyond Tomorrow would have been classified as like a B-grade film for Hollywood. And when they would bill a film, they would have, you know, this big image. And if there were featured actors that were famous in drawing people to the film. They put the names at the top and then they'd have the title and the supporting cast or whatever. But in this particular film, it was a very low budget film, Beyond Christmas was, or Beyond Tomorrow at the time. And so the title is at the top of the poster, and then beneath it is are these actors that are mentioned. And that the man that plays the Texan, you know, later on would be in It Came from Outer Space, you know, in the 50s. Right. This was up and coming. One of the interesting things that I found out about this film was that when we watch films today, we already know a little bit about the character of the actors, you know, who these people are, or some of the previous films they've been in. And in this one, it would be no different. Back when this film was released, those three main actors who will end up playing the ghosts, you know, they had a laundry list of films they'd already done and were known, you know, in Hollywood. And so that man, George, who's sort of the dark character, he'd been in several John Ford Westerns, you know, and a very stern guy. When I watched the film, I didn't know anything about him. And I was like, I didn't quite get it. But after I did some research, I was like, oh, now I see. This guy's sort of like a stern character. Everybody knows him as somebody. And so for him to be considered sort of a bad character, it wasn't too far of a stretch for them, but they see this redemption, you know, of this ghost as well.
I think it was Harry Carey. Isn't he?
That's correct.
Harry Carey. And he has a son, Harry Carey Jr. And we get to the Three Godfathers. Mm. We'll see that both Harry Carey Sr. and Harry Carey Jr. played in different versions of the Three Godfathers.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And the thing is, this was kind of a B film because there wasn't a big name actor in this particular film. Most of them have been character actors in other films. I mean, Harry Carey even was a character actor in lots of films as well. He played in a number of films with John Wayne when John Wayne was a lot younger. So, yeah, you're right. This is, you know, one of those films that gets lost in the shuffle because it doesn't have really a big name attached to it.
Right. And that, which is one of the reasons why they brought it back. They put it into circulation in the 70s and 80s, whenever there was a hunger in our culture for some of these kinds of films that look back, you know, at Christmas, something more uplifting. And so it went in, you know, it went on to television a lot like It's a Wonderful Life. You know, this movie Beyond Christmas didn't do well at the box office. It was kind of just came out, that made a little money and then left, you know, the end. Kind of like It's a Wonderful Life was.
Yeah, right. Yeah, a lot of people don't, you know, we'll probably get to It's a Wonderful Life, but a lot of people don't realize it was not a success when it first, you know, came out. And there's a story behind what happened that made it prominent in culture. But when we get to it, we can talk about what happened that put it back in the limelight.
So why don't we go ahead and move on into It's a Wonderful Life? And the reason why this Beyond Christmas was actually made, I think it was RKO Productions, which I think is also the same for It's a Wonderful Life. I'm pretty sure it's got that radio tower in black and white at the beginning. You know, of course, they've colorized this Beyond Christmas now.
Yeah. Well, It's a Wonderful Life was a Liberty film.
Oh, that's right.
I think it was Frank Capra's. Frank Capra was the one. They used to call a lot of the Frank Capra films Mr. Deeds Goes to Town, I think, is another one he did. I think Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. They called it Capricorn because they were very uplifting, positive films. And the It's a Wonderful Life was done by Frank Capra. And so anyway, yeah, that, and if you want to go to there, the story behind it's a Wonderful Life, the reason it became popular is someone forgot to renew the copyright of the film. And as a result, it was in the public domain. And this was, you know, Ted Turner, who started, you know, Turner Broadcasting Network, I think it was Turner, turned around and said, look, we can show this film 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and we don't have to pay anybody any royalties with it. And so that's how it became very popular. It was just anybody and everyone could show this film because there was no copyright. Then someone found out that while the film itself was the copyright for the film itself was not renewed, the music for the film, I think, had a longer copyright on it, and they renewed the music. And as a result, that's why you don't see it you see it like you used to see it, is because if you play it now, you have to pay some royalties to whoever owns the film. But you're right. The It's a Wonderful Life was not a success at the time. But this is, again, another post-World War II film depicting life at that time. And when we get to one of these other films, the housing issue, building homes and so forth, and the building and loan that was owned by the family and so forth. And I mean, this is one of those films that's just beyond anything that anybody today could ever do. It's been done in different forms and so forth. You know, what would happen if I was never born? But nothing. There's nothing. This, hopefully, no one ever tries to redo this film in the same way that it was done. You could never do it again. You'd ruin it, like they've ruined some other films that they've redone. But this was a film that takes place Christmas Eve, and you watch it and you find it, all this snow is on the ground. But this film was filmed in June.
Yes.
And it was terribly hot outside. In fact, there's a scene where you see Jimmy Stewart sweating. Well, the reason he was sweating was because it was so hot. And you think, how in the world did they get all this snow in there? Well, I think they used soap flakes. Before that, I think they had used corn flakes, but of course they crunched. I think they add shaving cream to the snowflakes. I can't recall, but
yes. Yeah. It's fascinating to think that these guys were running around in a bunch of soap.
Yeah. And it looks, none of that CGI. That's real ingenuity of Hollywood. And that, the town, and some of that town still exists, I think, in a Hollywood lot somewhere. But it is one of the largest sets ever produced up until that time, to create a whole scene of that. And here are a couple of other interesting things about the film, some trivial things. The cab driver and the police officer are the two... Sesame Street character, Bert and Ernie. But that's just a coincidence. But one of the actors in there, you'll see him in the tavern. And he's the one that, you know, the Clarence is in there and talks about ringing the bell, and he keeps ringing the bell and he's passing out wings and so forth. That man is named, he's a famous actor, another character actor, Sheldon Leonard. And if you've ever watched Big Bang Theory, two of the characters on there are named Sheldon and Leonard. And they are, in fact, named after the Sheldon Leonard character that's in It's a Wonderful Life, which I think is
no idea. That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
And of course, yeah, Donna Reed goes on after this, where she played in From Here to Eternity. She played in a number of films, and she eventually went on to the Donna Reed Show, and it was on for, I guess, in the 1950s. I know when I was growing up, it was on. And one of the things in It's a Wonderful Life that I found rather incongruous was that when Bailey comes, Jimmy Stewart's character comes back, you know, he's going through, no one can see him, and he sees Mary coming out of the library, and she's kind of a spinster.
Yes.
That wouldn't have happened, whether he lived or died. she was going to get married. There's no, absolutely. No doubt about that. But it was, that's part of the theme of the whole thing.
She probably would have married Sam Wainwright.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it looked like that was where they were projecting her to go into, but then George messes it up. So it would have made more sense for her to be married to Sam Wainwright, but whatever.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, that was, in fact, the scene where he's over at her house and the mother is just, she sees that George and Donna Reed's character have gotten together, and she's so upset by it because, you know, Sam Wainwright ends up being a very, very rich man, and he has a role to play later on in the film.
Right.
And there's another interesting scene where there's this old house that they eventually buy, and it has broken windows and so forth. And Donna Reed takes a stone and she throws it at the window. And that one toss of that one stone actually hits a window. Mm-hmm. The history says that Donna Reed, when she was growing up, played baseball. And so she had a pretty good a throwing arm.
Yeah, that was not CGI. She really did that.
Yeah, she did. But, you know, that film, the idea of a person's life and the impact that a single life has on other people's lives is really well done. And it's something for all of us, you know, to think about, the impact. I go through my life periodically and I say, you know, if I had made this decision or if I had made that decision and if I had gone there and, you know, what would my life have been? You and I wouldn't be doing this right now.
Right.
If I had made a couple of different decisions. But then to extract someone's entire life and to see the impact that it had on other people's lives is kind of a remarkable thing. And I think the Christian theme of this that's in the background, I don't know if a lot of people ever think about, but in essence, it is the Christmas story. The birth of Jesus changed everything and everybody throughout history. And so the George Bailey character, in essence, and there was a book that D. James Kennedy wrote, What If Jesus Had Never Been Born? And it puts that perspective into the world in which we live today. I mean, you think about that. Of course, a lot of atheists will say it would have been great if Jesus had never been born. And you say, oh really? Then let's think the implications of that in these various areas. So in that sense, It's a Wonderful Life is really the Christmas story.
I love how in the background, you know, like you said, that movie starts on Christmas Eve. So does Beyond Christmas. Both of them are taking place on Christmas Eve. But with It's a Wonderful Life, it begins with the prayers of people who are concerned about George Bailey. And you don't know anything about George Bailey or where he's at, what's going on. But then suddenly you have these stars, you know, the old way that they would get the heavens to speak, where they're so concerned about this individual and they want to answer the prayers to help this man. And, you know, the idea of the angel and not having his voice cued, it doesn't have anything to do with it biblically, but there's something about it that is uplifting, that the prayers of the people were answered, and that this man who cared so much about his community, but he was letting his own life go and take a back seat, what that does to people, that's something that a lot of us can understand. A lot of us make decisions for other people that affect us. And some of it doesn't turn out so great, like it didn't for George Bailey.
Yeah, there's the scene, of course, when Jimmy Stewart's character actually prays and even says, I'm not a praying man, but he had no place to turn as to where to go with this. And of course, at the beginning of the film, in order to get this insurance policy, or not the beginning, but to get this insurance policy, figures he kills himself. And that way his wife would get the money from this insurance policy because of his, I guess, is it Uncle Billy?
Yeah.
Why anybody would have given why anybody would have given Billy that much money to take care of is beyond, that is beyond me. That's another one of the, I think one of the flaws in this film. Yeah. I mean, he always had the yarn on his fingers to remind him of things. Mm-hmm. So, but again, this, that part of the film where he breaks down and prays, and just, you know, changes everything. And I think one of the most impacting scenes in this is the very end of the film where he's standing up there and all these people come in, all the impact he's had on these people's lives, that George Bailey's character never considered. And we oftentimes, mm-hmm. we spend so much time on the negative things that we do in our lives, and we forget that all the positive things that have taken place in our lives. And we never know. I get emails from people literally from around the world who, you know, your book did this for me. And I heard this about this from you and all that. So, my guess is almost everybody has that experience, but they don't know about it. They're not aware of the impact they've had on other people's lives.
Yeah, and that famous line at the end that his brother, that everybody looked up to because of George's sacrifice, his little brother was able to go on and be a war hero and to get a great job. And for him to sit there at the very end to toast his brother and say to George Bailey, the richest man in town, yeah. he's got a big pile of money in front of him, but he's not talking about the money. Right. That's a beautiful moral story for everyone to hear, that yeah. you can be rich in this life and it has nothing whatsoever to do with money.
Well, Mr. Potter is the antithesis of this whole thing. He had all this money.
Yes.
But he didn't have any friends, and the impact that he had on people's lives was terribly negative. And I think another feature in all of this is that the Jimmy Stewart's character, and that's what you see throughout this film. It was a self-sacrificial character that I think he didn't realize at the moment the impact that he was having on people. But he stood against tyranny in a very small and personal way in his town. He stood against it, and he didn't do it through violence. He did it through competition, establishing relationships, counting the cost. All of those elements, I think, are embedded in that film. It's a great, great film. If you haven't sat down and watched it with your children, they need to watch it as well.
Absolutely. It always reminds me after George Bailey's father dies, and he's in that room with the board, and he says out loud, you know, why my father ever started this old penny any, you know, savings and loan is beyond me. But even if it's just to keep your hands out of it, to be a competitor, you know. And so the board votes as long as George stays back and runs it, which stops him in his tracks. Yeah.
It's great. One last little trivia point. The swimming pool scene, that was an actual swimming pool with the
underneath the gymnasium floor.
Underneath the gymnasium. I don't know if you recognized one of the characters who opened up the floor. Was the fellow who played Alfalfa on The Little Rascals?
Yes, I did recognize him. Yeah.
Yeah. No, and there's a lot of good character actors in there. Thomas Mitchell, who played Billy, Uncle Billy, he's been in lots and lots of films. I think it's Lionel Barrymore.
Mr.
Potter, and yet he was in a number of other films where he plays a really jovial good guy. And of course, Drew Barrymore is related to the Barrymore family. So it goes all the way back. And oh, by the way, the movie I forgot was Here Comes Mr. Jordan, where he comes as an emissary from heaven, which is, if you haven't seen Here Comes Mr. Jordan, it's a very, very good film. And you also notice people who are my age remember the guy in the airplane up in heaven is Lloyd Bridges, who's starred in Sea Hunt and on TV. And he also played Mr. Mandelbaum in the Seinfeld series.
Yeah. Okay. So,
my wife will tell you, Gary, how do you know all this stuff? And I cannot tell you how, but they just, some of these things stick and lots of other things just don't stick. And I can't tell you why I remember these types of things, but I do. And that's perhaps
that's why I like you so much, because you want to know the truth is, in my family and among my friends, I'm that guy. I'm the guy that has all this trivial information, have no idea why it's there, but I can speak on it. Now, of course, some people would say, oh, you're just a know-it-all. Nah, I just got some stuff that's interesting.
Yeah. That's I'm not a know-it-all. There's some things I know more than others, and my wife's kind of thinks it's a little worrisome, but anyway.
Well, one other thing about It's a Wonderful Life, for those of you who like the Christmas movies Home Alone or Home Alone 2, if you pay attention, whenever the families are apart from the little character Kevin, whether they're in Miami, Florida, or they're in Paris, France, whenever they're watching television, it is the scene where George Bailey is almost about to take a job from Mr. Potter. And he gets mad and he's got his cigar and he's like, no, I'm not taking this job. One's in Spanish and the other one's in French. But that is the film, It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah, it's a great film. And I'm glad that they didn't renew the copyright. I don't know if it would be as popular today as it is, but by removing that copyright, it changed everything. Agreed. Oh, but by the way, if you're interested in the economics side of all of this, you can go to GaryNorth.com. Gary North has an article he wrote on It's a Wonderful Life and the whole economics of debt and so forth. And just type in Gary North and It's a Wonderful Life and the article will come up. It's very, very interesting. Gary North was, economics was one, history and economics was really his thing. And he has some interesting comments about the whole process of debt. And the application of debt in It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah, guys, I will do my best to remember to put that in the show notes. I'll put a link there for you, as well as a link to the books that we talked about at the top of the podcast so that you can get to American Vision. So what other movies that would you like to talk about, Mr. DeMar?
Well, I think the Three Godfathers.
Okay.
Three Godfathers. I'd mentioned earlier that Harry Carey had starred in a silent version of The Three Godfathers. I think there were a couple of silent versions. One was titled Hell's Heroes. And then there was a 1936 version of Three Godfathers. And that particular film, that one's a little darker. And The Three Godfathers is based upon The Three Wise Men. In the 1936 version, there were four of them. They go into a town called New Jerusalem, and they attempt to rob it. And one of the men is killed, and these three men escape and into the desert. And the fact they ran out of water, and they come across two things. One is some water that's poisonous, and one well that was blown up with dynamite. But they also come across a wagon where there is a woman who just delivered a baby. Her husband, I think, was killed in the explosion that tried to rejuvenate this old well. And she's left. She's dying. She has this baby, and here are these three desperados, criminals, on the lam, on the run. And they remember, these are hardened criminals. One of the guys, Bob, actually killed one of the men in the bank robbery, and they're left with this little baby, and it transforms them. And the redemptive theme that's there. And again, I won't tell you the whole story. If you want to watch the 1936 version of it, but it's Bob is the only one who's left. And he goes back to wants to take that child back to New Jerusalem. And he I won't tell you the whole thing. You need to watch it. That's a 1936 version. It's a little darker. Then there was one done in the 1940s, same title, and that one is with John Wayne. John Wayne and Harry Carey Jr. is in that one, and it's the same type of story where they encounter this woman. The Bible figures predominantly in both films. The religious theme is in there. They're very careful about the religious aspects of their role in all of this, and the goal is to survive in order to save this baby. It's a wonderful, wonderful film. I would recommend you do the one with John Wayne. It's a little more optimistic, I think, than the 1936 one. But as I mentioned, Harry Carey Jr. is in that one. His father was in the silent version of this. And again, it's the biblical theme, the birth of Christ. And, you know, here are these men, you know, coming to protect this child and taking this child to the New Jerusalem. And of course, Jesus Christ came, and he is, in fact, the New Jerusalem. You see this in Galatians chapter 4 and also in Hebrews chapter 12, the Jerusalem above. So there's another, it's a great, great Christmas movie. Watch the one with John Wayne. I think that's much more inspiring than the other one. The other one's pretty, a little darker.
Yeah, I saw that one on your list, but I have not seen that. So I'm going to make sure to get that in the next few days. I have not seen that. So I'm intrigued.
Yeah, it's very good. Very good. Very good film.
Now, this has nothing whatsoever to do with any type of religious background. However, I did see on one of your lists, and I just have to ask you, Die Hard.
Yeah.
Die Hard. Now, I saw it on the list, and it actually is it's on my list, and my castmate, Billy Kimsey, it's his favorite Christmas movie. Bruce Willis says it's not a Christmas movie, and he was in it, but it's very Christmas-themed. Do you think it is a Christmas movie, and what do you think about it?
Well, the reason I brought up Die Hard, because people do say this is a Christmas film, and so when you start talking about Christmas films, you have to kind of categorize what you mean by a Christmas film. Films that take place at Christmas time aren't necessarily what you and I would think of as Christmas films.
Right.
But there are some Christian, commercial Christian themes in the film, but the film is about reconciliation here. I mean, this is, and by the way, I compared Die Hard and Home Alone are almost identical in what they do. They both take place at Christmas time. The Bruce Willis character is protecting his wife and this building, trying to get the bad guys. And Kevin is doing the same thing. He's protecting his home, and he's going after the criminals. And in both cases, there is this redemptive family, getting the family back together again. Lots of things that Holly, interesting name, or Bruce Willis's wife, Holly. Yes. And you know, she changes her name. She goes back to her maiden name and all that. They're estranged, separated from the kids. He's in New York. She's out in California. So there's this distance idea. And the same thing that takes place in Home Alone. You know, Kevin is angry with his family. And in one sense says, hey, I wish they didn't exist. And he gets his wish. He's home alone. And over time, he gets to realize his family is extremely important to him. Then there's a backstory going on at the same time about this elderly man who's depicted as a murderer. And of course, Kevin grows up thinking this guy's a really, really bad man. And the guy looks a little sinister. Looks difficult to get, you know, to touch and embrace. And he is an interesting name. His name is Marley. And if you remember Christmas Carol,
yes,
the ghost who comes to Scrooge, Ebenezer Scrooge, Stone of Help Scrooge, his business partner 7 years earlier, another interesting Christmas film also with the 7 year idea, his name was Marley. Mm. And he figures in the redemptive element of this, and it's a dual redemption because not only is Kevin finally understands family and all of this, but this man, he's estranged from his son and his, and of course, his family and his daughter, I think his granddaughter.
His granddaughter, yes. Yeah,
and, you know, the church figures predominantly in there. At first, Kevin doesn't want to go into the church, but then at another time, he eventually does go into the church, and he helps. They help one another in terms of reconciliation of what's going on here. And of course, Marley comes back and saves Kevin when the bandits finally get him and put him up on the clothes hook. And Marley comes in with the shovel and hits these guys over the head. Now, there's an interesting scene in two scenes in the film, and I didn't notice this, and be interesting what other people think of it. Kevin goes to a drugstore to get a toothbrush, and Mr. Marley is there and standing right next to him, and Kevin panics and runs away, and the police go after him because they think he stole the toothbrush. But Mr. Marley puts his hand down on the counter, and it's wrapped in gauze, and there's blood on both sides of the gauze. And I have no idea why that's there. But later on in the film, when it's all over with and the reconciliation has taken place, Mr. Marley puts his hand up. There's no gauze and there's no blood. And someone had pointed that out. That was kind of interesting. So I don't know what to make of it. And there's a series on, I think it's on Netflix, called the Movies That Made Us. Mm-hmm. This is one of them. And it's a fascinating story of how this whole thing came together. John Hughes, who is more famous for these teen angst films, he wrote the script, I think, over a weekend or so.
That's right.
But he did not produce it. He had Chris Columbus actually do the producing, the directing of this. And Chris Columbus said that church scene is exactly as John Hughes wrote it, which is interesting. And John Hughes died relatively young. He was a big, big guy in Hollywood, died relatively young. So anyway, I think Home Alone is a really, really good film for the redemptive element of it. And actually putting a church scene in there. And I don't remember the hymn that they're singing, but it is a true Christmas.
It's hymn. O Holy Night.
Okay, yeah, there you go. Yeah, that's kind of unusual. Kind of unusual in all of this. And of course, they did a sequel to it where, you know, it loses some of the real important factors. They just decided to do kind of a slapstick thing. And that's the one that Donald Trump shows up in.
That's right.
Anyway.
Yep.
But yeah, it's another great movie. And oh, by the way, those stunts that those men do, I mean, they're painful to watch. They did all of those stunts, no CGI at all. Those guys did those stunts, even where the one guy falls on the concrete steps.
And he said, Joe Pesci.
Yeah. I mean, all of that. And they said in that the Movies That Made Us, that everybody on set that was watching that turned away every time one of these guys did one of these things. But they really did it. No CGI whatsoever in that film. Great film and great production as well.
It is. And there's two things I want to say about Home Alone. One, in the church scene, the older man Marley tells Kevin, he said, "Well, I'm not welcome." And Kevin says, "At church?" And Marley responds, "Oh, no, everybody's welcome at church." Yeah. I thought that was a good message. You know, no, everybody's welcome at church. I thought that was good. But also, I don't know if you've ever noticed, this is just something I've noticed. When you watch Home Alone, pay attention to every single frame of the film, and there is always red and green
in
the film. Every single frame, the house, the carpet, outside, everywhere. It's red and green everywhere.
Yeah. And that was the exterior of that house was a real exterior. Mm-hmm. But the inside of the house, they had to build the set. Mm-hmm. And they did all of this in an old high school in the gymnasium. So they built the set there because the water was going to be involved. And so they did it. They used the swimming pool in the high school in order to film the water scene. So again, it's the films that made us, but unfortunately, I don't know if I mentioned there's a couple expletives in it.
Yes.
It's typical.
That it's unfortunate. Unless you can watch an edited for television version, you're going to hear some language, and especially in Die Hard. So just know that going in.
Die Hard's a little more.
Yeah.
Yeah, difficult to
not really recommended for Christmas viewing.
But there, you know, if I could find this here, Let It Snow, Let It Snow, Let It Snow is performed by Reginald Vell Johnson. He's a police officer. Jingle Bells is performed by Bruce Willis. He's whistling. Winter Wonderland is also in it by Bing Crosby. But also Ode to Joy, Symphony Number 9. Is there as which was composed by Ludwig van Beethoven. So that's in there. And then there's the famous the what's that? Argyle, when they're driving into the parking garage, he pops in a cassette. I guess Bruce Willis's character says, "Hey, play some Christmas music." Pops in a cassette tape and starts playing Christmas in Hollis. And McClane asks, "Don't you have any Christmas music?" And Argyle responds, "This is Christmas music." And when you, and I never paid attention to the lyrics. It's kind of a rap type. You know,
I think Christmas. It's Run DMC.
Yes. And it really does depict family Christmas time. It's, you know, it's what I remember growing up of what Christmas was like. And this is just a little different perspective on it. It's a real, real catchy tune. I've listened to it a couple of times. I really like it.
Yeah, it's good. Well, we've approached about an hour. Is there anything else you want to share with the audience?
Let me see what else we have here that I've got on my list. Of course, there's A Christmas Story, which made eating Chinese food on Christmas the thing to do these days. The Christmas Story is interesting because the narration, if you've listened to the narration, the guy who wrote the Christmas story was Gene Shepherd, and he used to be on radio, told all these great stories. And the name of this is taken from his book. It's called In God We Trust, All Others Pay Cash.
Yes.
And that's what that story comes from. And I remember wanting a slingshot growing up, and I ordered one through the mail. And when it came in the mail, my parents took it away from me. I never saw it. So the Red Ryder BB gun thing is probably a lot of kids can kind of identify with that. And the idea of, you know, watching that TV, that Ovaltine thing, and he finally gets that little decoder ring, and then he gets the code, and it says, you know, drink
Ovaltine. Be sure to drink your Ovaltine.
Yeah, he was so ticked off.
A crummy commercial?
Yeah. Let's see. Miracle on 34th Street.
Yeah, it's one of my all-time favorites.
It is mine as well. Get the original one, which is 1947 with Natalie Wood.
Yes.
And I did a podcast on this film, not so much for its Christmas theme, although reconciliation is still dealt with there as well. But I dealt with it in terms of biblical apologetics, where Natalie Wood watches Kris Kringle starting to speak Dutch to this little, and again, post-World War II, little Dutch girl, probably parents lost in the war, adopted by an American family. He starts speaking Dutch, and they start singing a song. And she's starting to rethink this whole, the cosmic absence of anything purposeful in life, because her mother probably got divorced. She's very cynical. And then she makes this comment about, but when he spoke Dutch, And as like, this is evidence that maybe he really is Chris Kringle. And she says, well, I speak French and that doesn't make me Joan of Arc. And I just thought that was that's a great comeback line. You know, your apologetics needs to have solidity to it. Then the courtroom scene. Remember, he's taken to court. Is he does he have a mental problem? It's a danger to society. And the lawyer, he says he's really going to try to prove that he is Santa Claus. And it's a real, you know, judicial apologetic argument here as to whether or not he is Santa Claus. And so one of the arguments that, you know, they bring in is they gets all of these, you know, brings all these letters in from addressed to Santa Claus. And the prosecuting attorney says, but is he the Santa Claus? And again, very good argumentation. Then the politics comes into this whole thing. And, you know, is this judge going to rule that there's no such thing as Santa Claus? Well, he doesn't do that. He takes the political way out. And then there's the guy with the psychologist.
Yes.
Yeah. That was, again, this film done in 1947, very typical of psychology today. Everybody's got these psychological problems, and we're here to fix them for you. So I love Miracle on 34th Street. It's in fact, Gimbel's and Macy's. Gimbel's was a real department store in competition with Macy's. Macy's is still in operation, but I believe they're starting to close more and more of their stores. So
it is a remarkable story. I love that movie, and I love how when Chris Kringle gives, you know, which is really the backbone of the film, when he gives the good advice on where he can find it, go to our competitor, you can get it there. And then they begin to compete about how good they can be.
If only life could be that way. But see, that's the key to all of this. We know because we're creating the image of God that this is the way life should be in many of these cases. But we also know the operation of sin in the world, and that has to be dealt with as well. So another one is The Bishop's Wife.
Yes.
Which is, again, another angelic emissary. This is, again, 1947. Cary Grant, Loretta Young, David Niven, Episcopal bishop, wants to build this grand cathedral. Mm-hmm. And everything is concentrated on this grand cathedral. And again, he prays. He wants help from heaven. But yes, he wants help from heaven on his terms.
Yes.
And God sends an emissary about, I'm going to give you help, but on my terms. Mm-hmm. And then it was remade with Denzel Washington and
was it Whitney Houston?
Whitney Houston, yes.
Yeah, The Preacher's Wife. They renamed it The
Preacher's Wife. We already mentioned Beyond Tomorrow. Oh, it happened on Fifth Avenue.
I haven't seen it. I'm really interested.
Yeah, it happened. I know we're running out of time. It happened on Fifth Avenue. Is a story about post-World War II, housing crisis, people trying to find a place to live. And this hobo, we'd call him a homeless guy today, takes place in New York. And the second richest man in the world, Michael O'Connor, leaves New York, his house on Fifth Avenue, and goes to his summer home in Virginia. And so it's vacant and boarded up. Well, this hobo, Mac, Aloysius McKeever, I think his name is, in the movie, he found an entrance into this particular home, and he lives there while Michael O'Connor and all of his servants and so forth are in Virginia. And he essentially takes over the house. There's this, again, family relationship.
Seen this film. Yeah. I have seen it. That is right. Yes, I remember that now. That's right.
It's really good. The daughter goes, the daughter's estranged from her father. She goes to the house in order to get some clothes. She leaves finishing school, which she says finished her. But he's divorced, all the sort of thing. Money is all of his big is big, big thing. And then other people who are looking for places to stay end up coming into the home as well. It's a funny and poignant film. And there are a lot of clever one-liners in this particular film. But then there's a song that's sung there. It became very, very famous. It's called That's What Christmas Means to Me. And Gail Storm sits down at the piano and starts playing it. And everybody there has different parts and they start singing. There's a couple of other couples who have come in there too, there with children and as well. And here's one of the some of the lines from it. Carol sweet and clear, I pray the Lord to bless again this land of liberty with peace on earth, goodwill to men. That's what Christmas means to me. And I tried to find these lyrics, this song online, and I was unable to find it. You will find What Christmas Means to Me by Stevie Wonder, but this one is called That's What Christmas Means to Me. And I had to rent the film to actually get the lyrics, but I pray the Lord, pray the Lord to bless again this land of liberty with peace on earth, goodwill to men. That's what Christmas means to me. And that refrain occurs like two or three times throughout this particular film. It's a funny film. Great.
Yeah, movie. I'm going to have to watch that one again. So let me ask you personally, do you have an all-time favorite Christmas film?
I'd have to say it's a Wonderful Life. And I'm going to throw one in here that no one even thinks is being a Christmas film, but Ben-Hur. Ben-Hur is a Christmas film. It begins with a Christmas story. Mary and Joseph are going to Bethlehem. They're having, they have to register for the tax. And it's at that time that the three wise men show up, the shepherds show up. That's how Ben-Hur begins. And I think one of the things about doing real bedrock Christian films is not to try to tell the Christmas story, but to use it as a backdrop for another story. And Ben-Hur does that very, very well. It was written by Lew Wallace, who tried to show that the Bible was inaccurate, was all fable, and he ended up becoming a believer, and he wrote the novel Ben-Hur. So I would say Ben-Hur and Ben-Hur is like 3 hours long, but my grandkids, they watched it. They love Ben-Hur, but I would have to say It's a Wonderful Life is probably the other one.
This episode is brought to you by Supply Chain Solutions.
Supply Chain Solutions is a third-party logistics company providing small to mid-sized businesses an outsourcing option focusing on warehouse management, customization of products, assembly and packaging of goods, and has the ability to meet business-to-business and business-to-consumer fulfillment needs. Supply Chain Solutions continually strive to be their customers' most highly valued partners for quality, delivery, responsiveness, and customer service. To learn more about Supply Chain Solutions, you can visit their website at www.supplychainsolutions3pl.com. Again, www.supplychainsolutions3pl.com.
And now back to the show.
Have you ever seen the film The Family Man with Nicolas Cage?
Oh, Nicolas Cage. No, I have not.
So if you get a chance to see it, Tia Leone is in it and okay. Nicolas Cage. It will remind you of It's a Wonderful Life. That is my all-time favorite. Now, I love It's a Wonderful Life. But The Family Man, it's one of those rare films. Not many people know about it. It's a Nick Cage movie. You'd think that many people would know about it.
Yeah.
But it's really good. And it has an angel played by Don Cheadle. His nickname is Cash, and it's really good. And it's very heartfelt, heartwarming. And the kids in that film, they're so hilarious. These little kids.
I will look at it. One last one.
Yes.
Okay. There's an anthology film that covers five of O. Henry's short stories. And it's called O. Henry's Full House. Mm-hmm. And it was done in 1952. And there are some really good ones in there. But one of the Christmassy ones is The Gift of the Magi.
One of my favorite short stories. Yeah, okay. I love that. Yeah.
So you're aware of that. And that's, again, it's self-sacrifice, love. You know, the thing that, you know, you don't want to give up, but because of your love for someone else, you give it up. I can't remember the other one that's in it that I really like. Is about a woman who's dying, who's given up hope. And it's the one, she makes this kind of pledge about dying, about this leaf, that when all the leaves on this tree end up falling off the tree, she knows that then she's going to die. So if you haven't seen O. Henry's Full House, you need to do it for those two segments alone. I don't know what the... Can't remember what the other one was named, but that's a great anthology.
Yes, I saw it on Fandango. They actually had it on sale for like $5, so I thought I would probably pick that one up. Well, I really appreciate you doing this. Now, one other thing before we leave here, on AmericanVision.org, I just saw an advertisement. So you guys had vocal actor Steve Cook do A Christmas Carol, an audio form, right? Am I hearing that? Am I right?
I think that was something Eric had done with one of the companies that he worked for.
Okay.
So if he's put it up there, that's what that's from.
So, but it's on American Vision. You can actually order it there. I saw it.
Oh, okay. Yep.
So if you want to hear an audio version of I'll put it in the show notes along with these other things. So
is that the Christmas Carol? Is that the...
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it was A Christmas Carol. I'm going to see if I can find it. I think you guys had... It's the audio version. Let's see. Christmas Carol audio. Yeah, let's see. Audio collection. National Religious Liberties Conference. A Christmas Carol. There it is. Yep, it's on American Vision.
Okay.
And it is... I'm going to share the screen just so you can see here on here, guys. Let me share that real quick. Share that. So you can see here, A Christmas Carol, unabridged audiobook.
Yeah. I did see that, and I just completely I passed right by it, but I did see that we were offering that. But that is not something that we produced.
Okay, well, it is available, and I noticed that it was cut in half, 50% off, which is, you know, $15 for an audiobook of The Christmas Carol is pretty good. It's 3.5 hours, and that's pretty awesome. So go check that one out, guys. I'll put it in the show notes for everybody. Well, Mr. DeMar, thanks so much. What have you got? What are you looking forward to in the coming year? You going to be busy?
Yes. In fact, I just did a kind of a update of what we did for 2024 and giving you an idea of what we're doing 2025. Where one of the things we're producing is the 40th anniversary book on the great debate between Greg Bahnsen and Gordon Stein on whether or not God exists. It's probably the most famous debate regarding atheism that was done by Greg Bahnsen. And this is the 2025 is the 40th edition of, but this one is unique. We have the whole transcript in there, but we also have annotations in there from some of the works that Greg has done on apologetics. Greg Bahnsen was probably the greatest Christian apologist of the 20th century. And unfortunately, he died relatively young as a result of a heart valve defect. This was the third time he had open heart surgery, didn't survive it. And we published a number of his books on apologetics. And this is going to have annotations from some of those books and some of his articles, as well as some of the post-debate correspondence that Greg had with Gordon Stein. And so that's almost near completion, but that'll be coming out this year. And we have a number of books. We're reprinting a number of books. Victims' Rights, book that Gary North did on the case laws of Exodus. Got a couple of prophecy books coming out. Kim Burgess and I are working on this new project. We already did something on 1 Thessalonians 4. We're going to do something on 1 Corinthians 15. Mm-hmm. So I've got a lot in store for the coming year.
Yeah, well, that's great. Well, keep on keeping on. I don't know how you do it, but keep on keeping on. We appreciate it. And just for everyone to know, for me, your book, Last Days Madness, was a huge impact on my life. So that's why I wanted to meet you way back whenever I invited you, was because of that. So thank you for that work. Guys, go to AmericanVision.org, get The Hope of Israel in the Nations, get Last Days Madness, get The Christian Life and Character of the Civil Institutions, Institutions of the United States. By the way, that book is a beautiful book. And like I said before, I think every home needs it. I really do have, especially an American home, you need it. So
thanks, Rick. Thank you, Gary, I appreciate tomorrow. It. All
right. Appreciate it. Merry See Christmas you. And Happy New Year to you.
Same
and
to
your
you.
Wife.
Same to you. Thanks.
All right. Take care so much. Hey guys, this is Rick from the Burrows of Berea. A lot of people have been asking us, hey, what is this Patreon thing? Our old Patreon ad didn't work very well. So here you go, guys. Go to www.patreon. That is patreon.com. Let me do that again. patreon.com/theburrowsofberea. If you go to the Patreon page, you will find that we have different levels that you can give at. We have a $3 level, a $5 level. We've got a $10 level and a $20 level. I thought about putting a $1,000 level there, but you never know how that's going to work out, right, Andy? That's right. So go to www.patreon.com/theburrowsofberea and give us all of your money.
Even a little bit, we'll be fine.
Yeah, and that 5,000 wouldn't hurt my.
No, it would hurt nobody.
Thanks, guys.
Merry Christmas, everyone. This is Andy. Rick Welch decided to take a break from all the heavy studying to sit down and have fun. To sit down and have a fun discussion about Christmas movies with Gary DeMar. So good. All of us at the Burrows of Berea podcast want to wish you all a very merry and happy new year. Christmas is the word I missed. Hey,